It's PacView's Melissa Burdick, the Wizard of Woodland Hills Shree, special guest host Jackie Danowski from Flywheel, and I'm PVSB, also from Flywheel, a division of Omnicom. Before we get to the CPG Guys episode you've downloaded, it's the week of April 29th, an ACDS annual week, and it's time for the Fresh Four. Four curated news stories from the past week. We find them masterfully intriguing. We hope you do too. They're brought to you through our partnership with RetailWit, your one-stop shop for retail industry intelligence and news. RetailWit.com, it's retail right now. Sheree, lead us off, would you?
Albertsons has been named the 2024 winner of the Webby Award for People's Voice Top Shopping and Retail App. I am so immensely proud of the shopper experience team, our engineering counterparts, and all of our cross-functional partners across the organization. Cheers to your hard work and customer obsession, said Jill Pavlovich, SVP of Customer Experience at Albertsons. 23 individual Albertsons associates were recognized in earning this award. Congratulations to all of you, and over to you, Melissa.
Best Buy and CNET are combining their ad inventory. Consumer electronics retailer Best Buy and digital publisher CNET are teaming up to create a new retail media model. The electronics retailer and the publisher are combining their ad inventory, allowing advertisers to buy across Best Buy Ads retail media network and alongside CNET's tech review-focused editorial content, and measure whether ads seen on either platform drove sales. In a month-long survey during which CNET content was displayed nationally across Best Buy's in-store TV walls, 86% of respondents said the content made them more confident in their purchases. It also garnered a 25% lift in purchase intent, according to the companies. Super interesting space as retailers continue to look for differentiation.
Thank you, Melissa. The National Association of Chain Drugstore annual meeting set to take place this week in Palm Beach, Florida. The annual meeting of the NACDS is set to begin Sunday, April 27th at the Breakers Hotel in Palm Beach, Florida. Featured speakers include Walter Isaacson and Arthur C. Brooks. NACDS annual is noted for the strategic meetings that transpire between retailers, consumer goods manufacturers, sales and marketing agencies, and other ecosystem service partners. If you're on a budget, make sure to get a hot dog at the poolside restaurant at $27. It is the least expensive menu entree offered at this five-star resort. Brian, Sheree, and Andrea are all in attendance this year. Closing it out, Jackie.
Hello, Fresh Four listeners. Red Bull Pink Edition Sugar-Free hits shelves. Red Bull is launching a new permanent sugar-free edition this summer. Red Bull Pink Edition Sugar-Free combines raspberry and forest fruits with herbal notes of verbena. It is the second new variant introduced by the brand this year, and the first fully sugar-free flavor in its portfolio, aiming to attract new shoppers to the category. Red Bull editions have been largely incremental to the brand, with 50% of edition buyers being new to Red Bull as they grow their flavor offering.
Thank you, Jackie, and welcome as a guest host to the Fresh Four. That's it for the Fresh Four. Now on to the CPG Guys episode that you've downloaded. Welcome to another episode of the CPG Guys podcast. Our co-hosts, Sheree Rajagopalan and Peter V.S. Bond, explore how brands and retailers engage with consumers online, in-store, and everywhere in between. And now, here are Sheree and Peter. Hey everyone, welcome to the CPG Guys podcast. I'm PVSB, one of the aforementioned CPG Guys, and my domain of expertise revolves around things like retail, customer data, insight, CRM, and loyalty. And my co-host, the other CPG Guy, is an expert at branding, direct-to-consumer, unified commerce, retail media, his favorite topic, and increasingly marketplaces. So please join me in welcoming the man with one name, Sheree. Sheree, how are you doing today?
Doing awesome, Peter. Pleasure doing this week over week with you. And Peter's also known, by the way, in the James Bond world as Mr. Bond. I just like saying it in every episode.
I know you do. Sheree,
I won't give away your email address, but he's got an email address with 007 that only I know of.
It's pretty secret. Sheree, we're happy men. Pitchers and catchers have reported. The season starts anew.
Yes.
Another opportunity to destroy and dash your hopes as the Yankees ultimately go. When they lose the opener, they're going to be mathematically eliminated from the playoffs. I'm just going to let you know.
I'm going to let him indulge. after
it's
one
like last year, and look where that turned
Peter
out.
Thinks the Dodgers are the best baseball team that has ever existed on planet Earth.
Holding the trophy.
And wants to go head to head with the Yankees 27 plus championship.
I heard that
all
last
I'm gonna
year.
Do? I'm going to do our special guest feature from next week. But right behind me, we're going to have this little banner that says 28 times World Series champions.
I don't think
and
you can fit anything
behind
you. We're
going to put up all the greats all the way from Babe Ruth.
I think you're going to have to get rid of all those bottles on the sill if you want to show
Yogi
that.
Berra. I'm going to start throwing out names now time he says it.
So before we get to our guests, I want to remind our audience that all of our content, our series on profitability, our women's leadership series, our ongoing founder series in this first quarter, that all can be found by simply visiting cpgguys.com. Also, our friend Britton Ladd joins us on Instagram for our latest One Question, One Answer series. So please go over to Instagram at CPG Guys and check that out as well. And finally, our show's content is very audience driven. So we want your feedback to help craft what we're talking about and who we invite on the show. Stop by ratethispodcast.com/CPGguys. And leave us a rating and review on the Apple platform. We really appreciate all your feedback in the direction. It helps us make this podcast meaningful to the people who listen to it. So with that, I want to introduce our guest today. She is the founder and CEO of Stonehenge Technology Labs, which built and markets the unified integrated commerce management software application Stopwatch. We're going to learn all about what that is very shortly. We're very interested in it. That's why we invited Megan on the show. So please join us in welcoming Megan Kinmonth Bowman. Megan, greetings. How are you doing today?
Good. I'm the CPG girl today.
There you go.
Hey. You go. And for those of you watching the video, if you notice, Peter has a t-shirt on. Tell us about the t-shirt, Megan.
Well, interestingly enough, here in Bentonville, we have a games day where all the suppliers of Walmart get together and compete ruthlessly in basketball, you know, dodgeball, that sort of thing. And usually the agencies like to show up and show out pretty hard. So that is our this year's charity kick General Mills's butt jersey.
Well, I'm fortunate to have this t-shirt. I know no one at Walmart does because I think we all know the rules about you can't even give them a bottle of water, which is, you know, that's great for them. Yeah. But I'm not nearly as ethical, and I'm more than happy to get some swag from you. So thank you, Megan.
Hey, I wear swag from anybody that gives it to me. I have swag of all our competitors as well. So
there you go. Yeah, I remember my favorite thing in prep school and college, going to rowing events and watching the rowing teams that ultimately get to the finals and win. They would get all of the t-shirts from all their competitors. I thought it was great. You could walk away with 30 or 40 t-shirts. What a great concept. But let's put that aside. Megan, before we get to the questions, would you please tell our audience about Stonehenge Technology Labs, including first and foremost, because they like to follow along and query the web while they're doing it, where they can find your site online?
Yeah, no. So stonehengelabs.tech, T-E-C-H. Our user software is actually stopwatch.stonehengelabs.tech. But for the to get to know who we are, stonehengelabs.tech. We're on all the social media platforms, including TikTok, Clubhouse. Come join us.
Right. Awesome.
That's what the stopwatch is.
I got it. All right. So let's get right to the questions because we've got some really interesting ones for you. I'm going to ask Sri to kick it off. Sri, why don't you pose our first question to Megan?
Thank you so much, Peter. And Megan, welcome to the CPG Guys. Pleasure to have you with us as our CPG girl of the day.
There we go.
And so, you know, when you and I were chatting about Stonehenge Tech Labs a few weeks ago, you had mentioned to me that your partner and you literally packed up bags one day and decided, hey, we're going to head to Bentonville because you had a calling that the next big peak around digital retailing and digital acceleration would all come from Walmart.com. If that's true, what was the calling, Megan? And did we hear that right?
Yeah, no, good question. Was it Walmart specifically? Probably not. What we figured out, or what my husband, I had been part of the Quidsi integration. with Amazon back in 2010, I believe. And my husband, the partner at the time, every time I'd come home, I'd say it's really hard to shove really interesting CPG driven Quidsy code into an old stack like Amazon. You know, I was just a code monkey trying to push stuff in. And when it was announced that, or getting to come to the announcement that Walmart was potentially going to buy Jet, my husband was like, wait a second, that's the guy that does CPG better than Amazon, right? And I said, well, technically, yeah, from like a code perspective. He's like, well, no question. We got to leave Seattle and go put down roots in Bentonville. And it was gutsy. I remember, you know, saying goodbye to my friends and family and other friends who had built some really cool stuff around Amazon. And the bet we took was not necessarily on Walmart, but it was on the fact that many people in a multiplayer game against Amazon would be a very, very interesting competitive landscape within the next 10 years. And so we came to Bentonville because A, it's cheap. B, there's 1,200, you know, CPG offices like right here. And so in terms of, you know, working with our users and having, you know, direct access, that was the plan.
I think that was an excellent choice in terms of the decision to go, why move the mountain? Go to where the mountain is, right? And there are certainly a lot of suppliers there. So that's terrific. So Megan, you know, from listening to the podcast, I'm all about data insights. And we typically say that data insights and analytics should really center around the consumer. From your standpoint, true, false, somewhere in between, and why do you think data is most valuable in a brand's journey to success?
Yeah, I'll be honest. I mean, I'm just fascinated with you guys and people that sit in your seats that are using lead indicators and lag indicators to drive meaningful decisions. Like I'm actually wired a little bit more like a robot. And so when I talk about data,
is that a robot or a cyborg?
This week's
on the show, we've been talking about
do
cyborgs.
Not indulge him on the cyborg thing.
You will never know.
I know. He will go off on a tangent. Just move beyond it.
I'll tell you, the thing that is most amazing to me, and it's very, very simple, is money. Dollars and cents, right? How many units move over time? And where do those units move? And so there's a lot of lead indicators and lag indicators around data that I think are brilliant, right? Market share, impressions, and they all kind of culminate on where the dollars and cents ultimately land. But for me and Stopwatch, the thing that I feel like we're most blind to is where people actually voted with their money. And so it's a piece in that beautiful journey that I'm just all about. Like, there's so many good players in the space. And what I always try to do is figure out that one piece that is a little underdeveloped and go after that. And so for me, The actual dollars and cents that are moving through the $1.3 trillion of toothpaste, trips, trash bags that are moving, you know, all throughout the U.S. economy, understanding where those dollars and those units are happening, both in real time, historically, and then potentially being able to use the lead indicators that smarties like you guys are, you know, building to see, okay, are we going to sell more or less and make more money or less money? I'm simple like that.
You know, what a great country we live in. You were able to just literally your spouse and you decide, hey, there's an opportunity in Bentonville, great cost of living. That's where we're going to go anchor and focus on developing this product, you know.
Yeah.
So I want to get back to the word Stopwatch. I would like to decompose the name Stopwatch for the product that Sonin Check Labs actually puts out. Love to know within the Stopwatch platform, what retailers you have a partnership with or you cover, and then are you strictly e-commerce and digital sales only reporting, or are you covering what's really the large part of the universe of reach for most brands, which is the brick and mortar environment, now soon to be already developing omni-channel environment?
Yeah, great question. First of all, I'll tell you, I'm not a branding guru. I'd be interested to know what you think Stopwatch is about and to see if we hit it right. To be honest, the origin of the story is we felt like the basic reporting that was coming in whether it was for Walmart brick and mortar or Target or, you know, Amazon or even through Shopify direct to consumer sites, were just like so flat and stagnant. And I was like, you know, guys, we're all about speed and like laps and making action. Like we should be taking like 300 action points every day in the e-commerce space, whether they're right or wrong. We just need to be taking action. And so the guys were like, yeah, I mean, basically people just need to stop watching this thing happen and like actually start like, you know, participating. We're a bunch of gamers, right? And so, you know, engineers, we are constantly rousing each other and changing things up and that sort of thing. And that's really how we believe that the online commerce game should be played. And so that's where Stopwatch came from. That and it wasn't copyrighted, so it was free, which was helpful at the time. We're retailer agnostic, Sri. So, and what I mean by that is we've got a couple principles. When I say retailer agnostic, it means that even though we're here in Bentonville and even though, you know, my whole family works at Amazon, we don't, this software cannot have direct relationships with the retailers. We can't have friends and family. We use APIs, but very lightly. Typically, an API is designed around, you know, kind of a closed relationship. And because this software is built very much so that that predictions and things are coming up that may, hurt one retailer over another, based on the way all of the math works around each other, we love all the retailers, but we don't have active professional relationships. So we are, our code hits over 101 retailers today. And typically that's all broken down by channel too. So like, you know, for Walmart, we say Walmart has four channels, ship to home, ship to store, online pickup and delivery and brick and mortar. Five and .com. And so when we say one retailer, we say five channels. Amazon, we say one retailer, eight channels. And so that's how we break it down. And do we do brick and mortar? Absolutely. It's all data sucking in at the same time.
Before we go to the next question, Peter, one of the things I would like to know about Stonehenge's platform is, do you pick which data set you want to bring into the ecosystem? Do retailers reach out to you? Do brands? Like, how does a partnership get formed? I know Peter's next question will take a deeper dive into how it comes together in the data. I'm just looking for the top level. Like, where do you get these partnerships from? That's all.
Yeah. So if, we don't have sales and marketing. Essentially what happens is, somebody within a large CPG company will reach out and say, we heard you guys are kind of smart and you can get a lot of data. That's literally how it starts. And wow. what I say Stopwatch is, we are an ERP wrapper. So when we think about kind of what our position is within these companies, we're typically working with the CTOs, the heads of data, sales and marketing are usually the ones that say, hey, we need this data. But ultimately, the ones signing the contracts, we're in contracts against, you know, the Oracles and the Microsoft Dynamics of the world, not necessarily the, you know, agency tools of the world.
I love the fact that your business is so organic that it's all driven by client referral and reputation. That's pretty terrific.
For the record, I know one other person on this show, on this episode, who also loves data and puts the customer at the center. I wonder who that may be. Very good at analytics and loyalty as well.
Has a radio face too. Wait a minute. Never mind. In any event, so let's talk about this platform and the usability for your clients. Can you tell us about the dashboards? How configurable are they and how customizable overall is your platform?
Yeah, going back to that ERP wrapper concept, right? Our biggest competition is actually in-house tech builds. Sure. Right. So, you know, Clorox is putting together a data lake, or, you know, Unilever is, you know, bringing in a bunch of data scientists. And we actually don't even really view those guys as our competition. We just view them as an augment to solve another problem.
Sure.
So the way the platform works is it essentially wraps around the ERP, sucks all of the information
And for our audience, define ERP, please. We're a very educational podcast.
Yeah. Enterprise resource planning. So your SAP, your Oracle, whatever
Perfect.
That thing is inside of your company that everybody has to log into, but they all hate. We all have it, right?
Yep.
So we wrap around that, and then we connect in with your EDI, which is your electronic data interface that connects between, you know, your shipping and sales and your supply chain.
Yep.
And then we connect in with your through ETL, extract, transform, and load. We connect into every single retailer portal that you're currently getting data from.
Great.
Now, when we say we connect in, essentially what Stopwatch is a giant, think of it like a jellyfish that things connect to and then sit in for about a half second and then go somewhere. And so Stopwatch, when we build dashboards and things, it's a simple Power BI interface. And really that's just a way for people to be able to say where they want things to go, if that makes sense. Yeah. So we're kind of this this deliverer of data that ERP or that Oracle, Microsoft, SAP won't touch with a 10-foot pole.
Now you've got me thinking about the Friends episode on the beach with the jellyfish.
I was about to go.
I know. It's exactly where Shree and I go. So thank you.
Peter and I, of course, are dating ourselves with the Friends reference.
There we go.
I have the haircut.
And jellyfishes sting, Megan. Ooh. So is that some sort of reference to if you don't get like the IT word garbage in, garbage out? Like you don't get good quality data, it'll sting you?
Yeah. You're a brilliant marketer. I will use that now. I've never thought about that. But I think the big thing for us and what happens kind of in that layer is most of us are autistic, to be honest. We are relentless about making sure the data is clean. So, the reason I don't hire data scientists, out of universities is because typically they're dealing with a very sterile data set.
Sure.
We need more data engineers. And honestly, these CPG companies need more data engineers as well. Just people to say, hey, that ASIN on Amazon is actually, the same inherent product as that, Walmart item number. And so when you're thinking about it from a creative and a broader standpoint, consumers are making choices that our systems currently aren't set up to help people understand. And so that's where we kind of play.
Some of my favorite words, ASINs, Walmart item numbers, they bring back a lot of memories in the world I've grown up in.
Didn't you have ASIN tattooed somewhere on? Never mind. Go ahead.
I thought that was Patrick Miller.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Patrick Miller, you need to come to the show and have a discussion about ASIN tattoos. Exactly. So let's jump into KPIs and what are the type of KPIs you can actually get from the Stonehenge Tech Labs Stopwatch platform? And are they different for a brand? Are they different for a retailer? Or is it one homogeneous platform with a bunch of KPIs? You can customize the heck out of it depending on an analysis. And then I also love to know, is the dashboard a fixed set of reports with KPIs, or can you actually go ahead and actually decompose and build your own reports for a top-down analysis to understand a consumer journey?
Well, first of all, I want to hire you, Shree. if I could afford you. In terms of...
I can't even afford him. Trust me. I don't know why he does this with me. It's pro bono.
That's a question we got to ask my wife. If she can afford me, I think we're in good shape.
All right, good. So every single large CPG company or even small CPG company has on average 5.2 different tools and relationships to kind of make their lives easier, whether it's...
Megan, where did you... That's a very profound data point, right? Like 5.2. Where did you get that data point from?
We actually ran through... We've got a relationship with Statistica DB, Crunchbase. We're a pre-seed raise. So when you're in the venture capital market, you have to know kind of where you sit. Mm-hmm. And so those have been forced, kind of metrics. Yeah, believe it or not, I could show you a really crazy slide. People, most companies spend about an average of $2.3 million on data analytics tools that do not talk to one another. So independent of their ERP. Now, you know, that's a certain, I think that's over $10 million in revenue. And then 5.2 tools. In addition to that are the agency partners that help execute those tools, right?
Right.
Totally fine, right? I think, you know, that you need an outside PIM, you need an outside PAM, you need, you know, a market share partner. Those things are very, very important. The reason that Stopwatch is built the way it is because we believe, and we've seen it, a lot of these contracts that are done throughout the company actually overlap with one another. So they're paying twice, right? The brand team needs these sets of insights. So they buy, you know, contract X, Y, and Z. The sales teams needs this information. They need price scraping. And so they buy, you know, ABC. And at the end of the day, both are fine, but they're proliferating the solutions to their needs. And so the first thing that Stopwatch does is we go in and we say, okay, what all do you have? You know, every across the organization, you know, which subscriptions, you know, who's using what, which plugins, et cetera. And we make a huge list and we say, okay, if you're already getting this, we're not going to set Stopwatch up to do this. We're going to set Stopwatch up to receive this. Now, eventually, and I mean, I'm a competitive, you know, eventually they may see that they can do it cheaper, better, faster, you know, just directly. But a lot of times they can't, right? Like people have asked me before, will you ever, you know, be a PIM? And I'm like, no, I would use Salsify or One World Sync. You know, will you ever be a market share analysis? No, legally, we have too much data. That would be unethical for us. So you should use, you know, so-and-so or so-and-so. So the goal for us is not to take over. The goal for us is to augment. And so we sit down and we list everything that they have. And then we basically say, okay, you know how you've had to pull reports for the last, you know, your whole life? Take a minute and pretend that you are, you know, like 20 years down the future and you can just think of something and it comes up. What are the questions that you keep having that you can't find the answers to? And essentially, so we start with what they have, and then we start with what they've always dreamed about, but they never thought they could get. And within 24 hours, we come back together with the full plan and say, this is the number of retailers, this is the number of SKUs, and this is what we think you need, and we'll have it up and running in 30 days.
Sounds like a very collaborative process, but Peter, the question of the hour, what have you always dreamed about? Guess what? It's Dodgers winning one championship.
Do you want me to run the like the quantitative like probability of that actually happening? I'd be happy to send that to you all.
If you're watching the video, at this very moment, I've overlaid a photo of the World Series Championship trophy sitting in Dodger Stadium. Shri, please admire the glory of the trophy.
His dream came true this year, Megan. So the probability is 100%, but it's 1 versus 20, just for the record. Yeah, just saying.
All right. So back to the topic at hand, Megan. Sorry. We're quite punchy today.
I like a good competition.
So to that end about setting it up in 30 days for the client, obviously, you've got to develop reports and you've got to do analytics and you've got KPIs. I'm curious about how you designed your reports and if you are simply reporting data that you're sucking in, or are you actually doing calculations, and in what cases are you doing that, and what drives the decisions behind that?
Yeah, great question. I love that. So I'll go pretty technical in terms of the answer.
Go.
You know, when you suck data in, you've either got a base data layer or a derived data layer, right? Like the base data is just a one-to-one, you know, did this happen across the time period? And when you normalize that, essentially, you're usually normalizing over variable metrics, time, location, things that don't need to be derived. They just need to be interpreted, right?
Yep.
So we talk to our clients a lot about, hey, this is base data. They should never question whether or not we made this number up or modeled this number, or it's an actual number that they just could never get to because they didn't have the time or technology to like suck it out. So for a great example is on Walmart online grocery pickup, where I think we're the only people on the planet right now that can actually get by dollar, by SKU, by store grocery pickup, you know, out of the system.
That's great.
And it's not modeled. Why? Because, you know, 5 years ago, we built this dumbass system that like could do all this crazy stuff that was either going to make me bankrupt or, you know, potentially have some opportunity.
And for our audience, dumbass means technologically sophisticated. I'm doing a little gamer language translation there. Right. By the way, you mentioned gaming before I forget. The last time I played a video game, now I'm really going to date myself. Freshman year of college, and it was Lode Runner on the very first generation of Mac. That's how bad I am at not being a gamer.
Lode Runner is not bad though. Like it's
a little bit above Pong, but not much.
Shree knows the game Temple Runner because his daughter tells him about it all the time.
My first game was something on a dual boot floppy IBM 8086. So that was my first, it ended.
Warrior, was it?
No, but anyhow,
the question is, you know, how do you decide where the data is going to go? And essentially what we say is we come back with a list and say, hey, here's all the derivative data, right? And usually that list surprises them. I didn't know that was available in that particular portal. And that's okay. You know, Vendor Central is a killer portal. There's a lot of information there. The challenge is sucking it out. Yeah. Is ridiculous, right? So at the end of the day, first of all, we say, okay, here's all the one-to-one data. You guys own this data. It has been sitting here for years. What do you want us to do with it? Then we start to say, okay, cool. You know, these are things that you want to know that don't come out of the retailer. It's not a one-to-one, right? So we're either going to need to use, if you want to understand that metric, we either need to use you all's historical understanding and build a model, or we need to let it go and circle back. And so that's really how we decide what's coming in and how it's coming in.
Hey, follow-up question on that, Megan. Are there any of these platforms, particularly the retailer platforms or whatever, that try to catch people extracting data, and as a result, they don't want you to, so they put in place barriers that you have to develop throttle capabilities to go after?
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, the way that our system works is it's an encrypted system. So think about blockchain or when you go to move money. When you put your debit card in, the bank or the sender of funds is looking at you, Peter, as the person requesting the funds, right? They know it's you. So the way our system works is if we're going in on behalf of a Clorox or a General Mills, when it hits the back door of that particular portal, it actually says, oh, General Mills or Clorox is sitting here, you know, requesting their data. Yep. And so it's an encrypted system where, you know, like I always say, you know, if you forget your password or whatever, like we won't be able to tell you what it is. Because you enter your passwords into our system, they get jumbled, and then they unencrypt when they hit the back end of the retailer. So we don't look like a third party to the retailers. We don't, I mean, our privacy agreements don't set us up that way.
And so if they go and change their password and they didn't enter it into your system, then I'm assuming you get some kind of a notification that goes to them and says, your password doesn't work on this anymore, so we can't extract it until you fix it and tell us what it is.
Exactly.
Good.
Yeah, and like with I don't know, like with Retail Link, for example, the passwords update every 28 days. The system automatically prompts, you know, everybody they tell it, you know, we tell a joke and we try to make it fun. But at the end of the day, you know, what I tell people is we don't get any data that you couldn't get if you were literally like had like an army of a million people and, you know, unlimited time.
Yep.
You know, I'll use that to just remind our audience that this podcast too has always been about fun, the humor, you know, and about most importantly, the transformation of this industry, the CPG industry. But Peter and I always think to why we did this in the first place, you know, to make sure that the consumer always gets quality products at value from brands and from retailers. So the area I want to then jump to based on that is D2C. D2C is obviously a word that has been around quite some time, a lot of buzz in the industry, but it's not for everybody. And especially if you've got like 100,000 distribution points, you shouldn't be building D2C to compete with your 100,000 distribution points, including even your 1P, let's say your Amazon or your pure play businesses. What is your approach to D2C? And can you report D2C along with all other channels? And what happens if there's also B2B, such as a food service business, where there's an ability to sell into trade shows, hotels, motels, things of that nature, especially if you're a food or beverage brand? So I'd love to know how you guys think of D2C.
Yeah, so D2C, now again, from a technical perspective, like you guys are the experts in terms of how, you know, what actually should happen. What I always say is we're the engineers behind it.
Peter, somebody called us an expert.
We have to squelch that. We have to squash that right away, Sri. It's going to besmirch our reputation.
Hey, I always say I'm just the person behind the curtain writing the code. If you ask me to actually try to solve the problems, I won't solve the right problems. So
that makes us Oz, Sri. We're the mighty and yeah, we're the big yeah. Okay.
So from a technical perspective, D2C is actually the simplest to trace, right? The shortest distance between two lines is or two points yeah. of the line. And so from D2C, Shopify, Magento, all of those guys, easy to grab stuff from. In fact, we do quite well with that. Also marketplaces like eBay, Target Plus, Amazon Third Party. Those are fairly simple, right? Those are straight lines. In terms of the kind of fragmented handoff state, like a long distribution where there's a wholesaler and then to a retailer, et cetera. Typically what we do, and this actually, it's crazy. We do this in auto parts. Believe it or not, the aftermarket auto part industry is a lot like this. Alcoholic beverages, Coke, Pepsi, the bottlers, and then also smaller food brands, right? So they go through KeHE or they go, KKM or whatever. And essentially what we tell them is, hey, we'll follow you at every stop off. If you and your partners allow us to. And so once we get the consent to, have the EDI copy from, I'm making this up, Coke proper to Coke bottling group. And then the bottling group takes it out and, runs their thing. If the bottling group is willing to share that information with us, which they usually are, because we push it back into them as well. Then we've got kind of a full story. Now we have to make some derivative data decisions based on when the bottling group puts it on the back shelf of a convenience store, right? There has to be some correlative decisions based on the bottlers aren't keeping track of point of sale, if you will. So that's where it gets derived for sure. But for the most part, we just need to follow the data.
Yeah. Hey, Megan, thanks for using Coke and Pepsi as examples. As you may know from the podcast, Sri and I come from those ecosystems, and a lot of our listeners are still in those ecosystems. So
brands, we will always be thankful for life that we got early in the CPG industry. Peter and I were anchored to those brands, and we learned a ton about DST in the process.
But you made what you were talking about relevant to a good chunk of our audience. So thank you for that.
The thing that we love as data scientists that I mentioned, there's $1.3 trillion of American economy moving through this, chips, trash bags, toothpaste, bottled water. And what's so cool about it, again, from a very technical perspective, you guys sit really, obsessed with brands and connecting people and all that sort of thing, is the CPG space is, aside from medical records in fintech, the most complicated data space on the planet. And so for nerds like me, that's why we get really excited about it, because how syrup gets all the way to, a restaurant is some of the most complicated stuff we've ever accomplished as a human race.
Isn't there like a show on Discovery that talks about how it's made?
Yes, yes.
I watch that show occasionally. Some of the largest brands and categories.
Brilliant. So Megan, you heard us at the top of this podcast talk about how our content is driven by what our audience wants to hear. So in that light, for you, what are the new capabilities that your clients are looking for you to develop? And how do you go about innovating to keep Stopwatch ahead of, you said you don't necessarily have any direct competition, more an enhancement, but I'm just curious how you think about innovating within your tool and your platform.
Yeah, it's a great question. So I'll be honest, we actually struggle with being too far ahead, to be honest, of the curve. So a lot of the things that our clients are asking for us to do are things that are already in the market. Market share is probably our biggest request. And then secondly, to syndication. And what I say is, hey, there are like six really good companies that do market share and six really good companies that do syndication. Let's go talk to those guys, or, you know, let me get you with an expert who's going to help you get those things. So that is probably like the most direct feedback I'll tell you from investors and, you know, mentors in the fintech market, which is kind of where we look to keep moving stock trading market and the fintech.
Right.
And I think Melissa Burdick and Andrea Lee are all over this, but the thing where like my kid just like buys something off TikTok. So, Sheree, we're talking about like, you know, distribution chain, you know, back to the consumer. And basically what our investors are telling us is, okay, well, what happens? Like, how do you know where that thing comes from on TikTok? It's usually like from Wish overseas, you know, how do you track that? So those are the kind of the big questions we're answering in terms of the
we have a profound question for you since you mentioned TikTok. Like, this is like really important.
Okay.
Should the CPG guys continue to have a TikTok account?
Hell yes. Absolutely.
Even after the announcement that the Walmart Oracle/Microsoft deal is dead, still stay on TikTok, yes?
Absolutely. I mean, who else is gonna steal all your data, right? Like,
okay.
Sorry, I didn't mean to throw you off the flow, but that was a profound moment.
Absolutely. TikTok's fun. I'm sorry for not answering the question directly. Essentially, our CPG clients are usually asking us to do things that we know other people can do.
Yeah.
And typically, you know, they'll give us feedback on user interflow, or, you know, typically a company starts out with maybe six analysts using it. It quickly goes viral and there's, you know, 600 analysts using it. And so we get a lot of feedback on, you know, this button should be this color, or, you know, I'd really like to see it shaded this way. A lot of people hate the dark background, which I'm like, that's very easy to fix. You know, that kind of stuff is kind of the feedback. But I think as people get more and more comfortable with the idea of not being starved for data, we think there's going to be a lot more fun kind of challenge questions coming across.
You know, the only reason that the CPG guys haven't introduced a more sophisticated website yet, it's coming, is Sheree and I can't agree on the font. But that's a whole nother story.
You can ask my team how I feel about fonts. Like, I will fire you over an email font.
Megan, I have
I'm
to
the
share.
I'm the Times New Roman guy. Always been.
Megan, I'm going to share with you a funny article written about 10 years ago from the standpoint of I'm Comic Sans font. Yeah, it's fascinating. It's a good one. It'll make you, if you like fonts or you hate fonts, it's a great one. You take sides. It's wonderful. Anyhow.
You're not looking for Comic Sans on your website, are you?
No, I'm just saying that Comic Sans has an attitude.
Oh, yeah.
You'll see what I mean.
Okay.
I'll post to everyone on the podcast. I'll post in the liner notes a link to the article. It's quite funny. I read it 10 years ago. I read it every once in a while. It just makes me guffaw. Anyhow, I want to remind our audience that all of our content, everything, our links to the video, the audio, documents, bios on Sheree and me, our favorite podcast that we listen to, everything, just go to cpgguys.com. And if you want to give us that feedback, we just talked about it. We really want you to help guide the direction of this podcast. Go to ratethispodcast.com/cpgguys and leave a review on the Apple podcast platform. While you're there, rating, you know, whatever star, maybe the fifth star, that's a good one. We like it. Anyhow. Oh, look at that. Five. Can we make
it? No, when I was a kid, Cadbury used to make a brand or a chocolate called the 5-Star Bar.
Ooh, I like that.
And it used to be luxurious and expensive when I was a kid. Anytime I go back to visit my mom in India, the first thing I try to do is try to get a Cadbury 5-Star Bar from the local store. And it makes me feel special even today.
Something about that
5-Star is special.
Speaking of Cadbury, my wife Zara, I'm gonna throw this out. Sorry, but my wife absolutely loves Cadbury Crunchy. Whenever we get out of the country, go to Canada or the UK, it's her kryptonite. In any event, Megan, thank you so much for joining the podcast. This was really a lot of fun, and you helped us understand why brands in particular would want to leverage your platform to make their life as streamlined, unified, single point of information as possible. One version of the truth. That's a really terrific solution. Can you remind everybody where they can find you online again?
Yeah. So go to Stonehengelabs.tech. Yep. You can also, drop a DM through our LinkedIn or any of our social channels. Of course, we're a bunch of nerds, so bots bring it right to our phones the minute you send a note. So happy to answer questions in real time.
And we'll put a link to your LinkedIn profile also in the liner notes. So thanks.
That's good. Thanks,
hey,
guys.
Hey, Sri.
Thank you,
this
Megan.
This was a lot of fun, wasn't it?
Oh, anytime I can talk about the Cadbury 5-Star Bar. And we can get into cyborgs. How can it not be fun, Peter?
Yeah, and I'm going to give a shout out to my daughter. It's her second birthday tomorrow. Got it.
Happy birthday to Nadia.
Anyhow, thanks, everybody.
Second birthday was like my best year, guys.
I'm liking it. All right, everyone. Well, thank you for joining us, and we look forward to you listening in on the next episode of the CPG Guys podcast. Thanks and goodbye.
Thank you.
The content in this podcast episode is provided for general informational purposes only. By listening to our episode, you understand that no information contained in this episode should be construed as advice from CPG Guys LLC or the individual author, hosts, or guests, nor is it intended to be a substitute for research on any subject matter. Reference to any specific product or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by CPG Guys LLC. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. The views expressed by CPG Guys LLC do not represent the views of their employers or the entity they represent. CPG Guys LLC expressly disclaims any and all liability or responsibility for any direct, indirect, incidental, special, consequential, or other damages arising out of any individual's use of, reference to, or inability to use this podcast or the information we present in this podcast.